Welcome to the podcast. It's dedicated to making you a faster cyclist, the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. I'm Coach Jonathan Lee, again here with our head coach, Chad Timmerman.
Hey, everybody.
And our CEO, Nate Pearson.
Hey, hey.
And another special guest with us, live from Kona, David Nichols. How you doing, David?
Yeah, very good, thank you.
So you are a Trainer Road user.
Absolutely, yeah.
A Kona qualifier. And we are going to talk to you, just like we actually, a previous podcast that was just published the day before this, we're going to talk to you a little bit about how you have worked through and navigated through all the different circumstances necessary to qualify for Kona. And then hopefully we can glean some useful information out of this. But before we do that, we should start off with a few things. Number one, can you let us know where you qualified and what your qualifying splits were?
Yeah, sure. So I qualified at South Africa in April, championship race. My overall time was 9:26.
Whoa, so fast.
it's quite fast on a pretty slow course, but actually the guy who won my age group got 8:50 something. So I mean,
wow.
Just, I'm 30 to 34, so yeah.
That's a fast age group for those who know, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I swam 57 minutes, I rode 5:06 and then ran a 3:17.
Wow.
Well, that's
you're fast.
Yeah, very fast. That's a really good bike split, actually.
Yep.
5:07. Yeah.
It's good for the course. Yeah, because a lot of headwind and very, very bad quality roads.
So what bike do you ride?
I ride a BMC Time Machine.
Okay. What size? Like, how tall are you roughly?
So I'm 6 foot.
Okay.
And it's a medium, I guess. Yeah.
A medium. Okay.
And what's your weight?
Well, race weight is just under 66 kilograms. So.
And then FTP, and this is in the aero position, if you know that.
Yeah, right. So it's around 310. It's definitely 310 when I did it in South Africa. So it's just under, it's about 4.7 watts per kilogram, which is a lot, but I'm very, very light. So
yeah.
I think watts per CDA is almost as important for Ironman, unless you're doing like Nice or something. So
do you know your CDA?
No, I don't, unfortunately. No.
Yeah, but you're right, though. It's very much so watts per CDA is the Ironman.
That's
what matters. Yeah.
But still, it's 4.7 watts per kilo. Just about 5 hours. A faster course should probably be 450, 445.
Yeah,
probably.
No, I think so. Yeah,
on a more standard course.
Yep.
That's really fast. Like, you're beating. Did you beat women pros?
Yeah. So actually, I finished just before the woman who came ninth or something. So
yeah. So that's just give you an idea. That's really fast.
You're basically pro. So I guess a bit more information on your equipment, and then we're going to get into a little bit of your lifestyle information, so then people can have a point of reference. What helmet do you use?
Well, this is a good question. Yeah, for South Africa, I used the Giro Arrowhead, which is phenomenally fast. But actually, that was the only learning point from that race is that in the last hour, I just could barely hold my neck up. I was in so much pain.
Because it was heavy.
Because it was very heavy, yeah. And it's partly because I hadn't ridden outside at all, actually, in the build-up due to time and conditions. But actually, yeah, so for this time, I'll be using a Specialized Evade, which is, putting it on feels like I'm not wearing a helmet compared to the Arrowhead. I mean, it's just a...
Do you have that too because it's the hot conditions here?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a combination of heat and weight, but mostly heat, yeah.
So how did that affect you on the run? I can only imagine if your neck's that tired. I'm like, I've had that before when I get back to riding after I've taken a break like recently, and it was so hard. And in enduro, I had a huge full face helmet on and I was just like, I can't wait for this to be over. My head's going to fall off. How did it just go away once you took the helmet off?
Yeah, so I was very worried, obviously, but no, within the first kilometer, I felt 100% fine again, actually. Oh, so no, maybe just lucky, but yeah.
What other equipment things should we cover?
What about tires?
So I was running the Vittorio course G.
The fast ones. Vittorio course is speed G plus.
Right, exactly. Yes. Yeah, those are the ones. Yeah,
rolls right off the tongue.
The paper, they're really fast, but they're very, very thin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I was a bit worried, but yeah, I mean, and they were literally brand new for the race. So
the tubeless?
I think that's helped. Tubular.
Oh, it was tubular.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. Are you running tubulars here as well?
No. So I have different wheels there, right? Because for South Africa, I used a disc. I had a Zip Super 9, and that was just a tubular wheel, and then a tri-spoke up front. But this time, I borrowed a 404 and 808 from a friend because I think it's just obviously you can't use a disc. And on the front, yeah, I wanted a much, much narrower wheel, shallower wheel.
Why did you want a shallower wheel?
The winds are absolutely brutal here. It's not just that it's headwinds or winds, it's that it's gusts. And yeah, I've been riding on the Queen K, and I'm very glad about that choice. I think it was smart.
For those who don't understand, because I didn't understand, Reno's very, very windy, and I've ridden on 30, 40 mile per hour days.
Oh, yeah. All three of us were very versed in the wind.
Yeah.
But this is something different.
It's because of the gusts.
It goes absolutely.
When you go down that road from Javi, you're going very fast, 40, and then in the air position, and it will be 10 mile per hour wind that you feel, and then suddenly there'll be this giant gush, like someone just ran up and tried to push you off your bike. And that's where people break collarbones and
it's pretty dangerous.
All that kind of stuff. It's very dangerous.
Yeah. Now, this is your first time to Kona, which is actually going to be kind of like a theme for this conversation, is kind of touching on the previous podcast we did. It was with somebody who had been here, and then, you know, the things that he's learned. This is going to be, you know, you're fresh, you're green. So we get to kind of go into that. But have you ridden the bike course yet and experienced those winds or a portion of the course?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I arrived on Friday. So I've ridden most of the course by now, I think. Yeah. So I've seen it in most conditions. So yeah, I feel like I know what I'm up against.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a smart thing to do. Other equipment that I can think of is your shoes.
For running or biking or both?
For riding and
let's
then
do both. Yeah.
And then
I think my running shoes are more interesting, but for the bike shoes, I use the specialized tri shoes. I'm not sure what they're called, the red ones.
I think they're called tri or something. They're
Tri-Vent.
Exactly. That's the one. But actually, for the running, I use
Vaporfly 4%. I just got my wife those.
Okay. I don't know how much it's psychological, but they feel really, really fast.
So little Nike ad right here. The Vaporfly 4% those are the shoes that they developed to try to break the sub 2-hour marathon. Yeah. Great at marketing, but they have a carbon fiber plate in them that acts as like kind of like a spring. It's supposed to be springy. And then the material, she was in the Nike Streaks before, which are the same kind of shape, but the Nike Streaks are a racing flat, and those are very, very hard, right? Like kind of the classic cross-country racing flat. And then the Vaporfly 4%, her opinion was very cushy, almost like her Hokas.
Yep.
Like very spongy, yet very fast. New York Times did they researched Strava times for runners, and what they had like 7 or 8 different analyses of people like changing shoes or doing different races and different shoes based on reporting what shoes you ran in. And basically the Vaporfly or the Nike Streak was always the top. Mm. And at the bottom, a lot of time was the Hokas, which a lot of people love those. I think a great training shoe. Yeah. What shoe do you train in?
The Adidas Boost Fly, I think it's called. So like the top of the range Adidas one, but that's one I've ridden for 4 or 5 years, and so I like it.
Yeah. My wife just did a race, and this is N equals 1 doesn't count, but she just did a marathon in the Vaporflies like a week ago. She won the marathon.
Heck yeah.
Shook 10 minutes off her PR, but it was like a 60-person marathon.
Yeah, a win.
Win's a win, right?
She's qualified for Boston out of it.
I've never won a marathon. I never won anything.
I'm going to get those shoes. High end. I'm going to get those shoes, but I don't think I'll qualify for Boston.
So yeah, so Vaporfly 4%. You look at like the Boston, all the winners are doing it. I think they just broke the world record in Berlin with the Vaporfly 4%. They're really hard to get. What?
Save it down to what?
Ooh, 203 something something, right? Is that right? I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something around there, but really close to the two.
Jeez.
And so when they got this is a running podcast. They got a little closer to the 2-hour record when they did they like tried to do the conditions just perfect, and they had that car in front of it. They rode
drafting.
They did a Tesla, so there was no exhaust, and there's some drafting. They had pacers. Doesn't count for
project.
Project 2.
Project 2. Yeah.
That was it. Interesting.
Let's talk more about running. I have like all this running stuff.
We'll get into it. But I need to touch on your shoe for the bike. Why did you choose a tri shoe over a cycling shoe? Because it's interesting. I feel like I see more and more triathletes picking cycling shoes, taking their time in transition, or using those little elastic laces, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, what made you pick the tri shoe over that?
So this is good. I mean, it's basically just that I spent a lot of money on the shoe as I started to get into the whole, as I started to get serious, basically. So I bought a very expensive bike and a very expensive shoe. And I, you know, over the last 6-7 months, I've seen that, maybe it would be make more sense actually to have a sort of proper cycling shoe, but these are comfortable. And actually for something like Kona, they're good because they've got a huge amount of venting in.
Yeah,
that's
sort of
true. The full-on bike shoes, I think it's a lot more enclosed and, I mean, clearly just warmer, right? So I think actually for something like Kona, they're fine. And
are you going to put socks on?
No, I don't wear socks on that.
Yeah. Yeah. So people know that shoe was like $350, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like US.
It's expensive. Yeah.
It's expensive.
It's an expensive shoe. And there's the term hot feet, and that's usually talking about like when you get hot pressure points on your feet. But then there's just genuinely having hot feet. And it is extremely uncomfortable to have that. And also, when you're getting into the run thereafter, if you've been sweating like crazy and your feet are super hot, and then you get into that run, your feet might fall apart, you know, and just be covered in blisters after that. So, and kind of ruin the run.
Trench foot.
Exactly. Yeah, gout. But it's extremely important for a person, especially at this race where it's so hot and humid, to make sure that you kind of you keep that part taken care of. So it's a valid choice.
It is, but I think all the pros wear cycling shoes now, basically. So
it seems like it, right?
Yeah, probably that would be the smart move if I was to start again. But I'm fine.
Maybe Ferdino still uses a tri shoe. I can't remember.
These ones too that you use, they have the heel that opens, so you can get in faster.
Yeah.
And if you're maybe doing shorter racing, but on Ironman, it kind of the reason why you would do a cycling shoe is it's stiffer and more aero than the tri-vent.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's also hard to spend another $350 and then another $350.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Let's cover your kit really quick. Are you a sleeveless or sleeved guy?
Definitely sleeved, I think. Okay. Predominantly as I'm English, so I just the idea of being out in the sun with my shoulders exposed for 5 hours is just a killer idea. But I think it's slightly more aero as well. So
Who makes your kit?
It's Hub. It's the standard white Hub that everyone seems to have nowadays, but yeah, nice. It works well.
And the recent trend, maybe it started in 2009 or 10 when Crowe wore long sleeves, but long sleeves are faster than sleeveless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think sometimes it's actually a little bit cooler, especially if you get white sleeves.
I think so, especially if you can keep it wet as well, which I do. I mean, there's so many egg stations here that I just keep
that's the key.
It wet and it should be, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's like a swamp cooler. You pretty much, you put water on it and then it evaporates and you get the evaporative cooling.
Yeah. Instead of it just hitting your skin, it keeps it around a little bit longer and it can help with that. So, so you just mentioned that you're British, but people might, you know, we're throwing them for a loop because although you are British, you don't actually live in the UK. Where do you live?
That's great. I live in Moscow.
Okay. In Russia. Yeah. So, what do you do for work? I don't know if you can say such things, but what do you do for work?
Are you a spy?
Yeah, everyone says that.
From UK.
So what do you do for work and what's your family situation like?
Sure. Yeah. So I work in the finance industry and asset management. And my family situation, I live there with my wife and my child who's 1.5.
Got it.
Ooh, qualifying with a 1.5-year-old.
Well, yeah, I think, and that was probably the biggest motivation to actually do the qualifying process, I think, because when we found out we were pregnant, I realized that, yeah, it was now or never, basically. And actually the first, so as I said, my first race was in April, and actually the build to that wasn't so bad because sort of below one, he basically sleeps a lot, right?
And no, it's true.
So actually it wasn't so bad, but yeah, this time it's clearly a lot more difficult. And I mean, I'm definitely a one or done type of guy, I think, for Kona. It's a lot of time. But
so this is your first time qualifying for Kona.
Yep.
Is this your first like honest attempt at qualifying, or how long have you been doing triathlon?
No, I did Ironman Nice when I was still at university, so 9 years ago. That was just a one sort of fun thing with my friends. When I got, I used to do rowing before that, and I did it with some rowing buddies. But then I basically joined the corporate world in London and spent 6 or 7 years just doing the odd event, but not no sort of triathlons or anything serious. Mm. And then, yeah, I sort of got back into it a bit three years ago, just out of it, because I had a bit more free time, I guess. And then, yeah, when the baby news came along, I thought, yeah, now's the time. Let's see what we can do. And yeah, I really went for it. And South Africa was my first attempt at trying to qualify.
And you mentioned this is a big time commitment. How often or how much a week? What's your training volume?
Yeah, so for South Africa, which was my A race to try and qualify, I was averaged 16 hours a week for around 5 months, which is pretty intense.
Quite a commitment, yeah.
But that was really thanks to a few. I did 2 weeks of almost, well, 1 week of 24 hours and 1 week of 22. And that was, the first week was when my wife and child were away, and the second week was when my parents came to help. Yeah, so that really boosts the average up. But this time I'm a bit less. This time I'm around 12 to 14 hours with 1 20-hour week.
What do you think is the mix between bike, run, and swim in your training?
It's around 50% biking and then 25-25 roughly.
And all indoors?
So biking, yeah, I'm 100% indoors.
Do you use any software for that?
It's a good question. Yeah, no, I'm a very passionate trainer road user. I think it's really probably...
You!
You
had to cut that out for a
second. No, but actually that was the reason I decided to start doing it, because I did, when I started using trainer road, I was just really thought this is so incredible. I mean, it is feasible to qualify for Kona. When I saw my FTP shooting up and things, and that was probably the main reason why I decided to go ahead with
what limits you to predominantly training indoors?
So living in Russia, obviously the climatic conditions make it hard, but then apart from that, it's just time. My friends do this, that you could drive, you'd have to drive an hour and then faff with a bike and then drive an hour back. I just don't have that time, right? And especially then, even then, there's cars and stuff, and I like to hold the aero position as much as possible as well. So it's a combination of all three of the things.
Yeah, all good reasons. Yep. Sure.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So you did 8 hours indoors. How much of that is like, how do you break it down between, you know, threshold intensity versus aerobic endurance?
So I follow the Train the Road plan to a T.
David, I love you.
you guys can tell me what I've done, basically. But yeah, I mean, in case anyone doesn't know, it's basically Tuesdays is a sort of a VO2 session. And then actually I did Wednesdays as more of a sort of a sweet spot session, I guess. And then with an easy ride on Friday, and that was the one I would not do. I didn't have time. And then a sort of longer ride on Saturday.
We went riding today with a guy who has a coaching business. And he said that he's qualified for Kona. And he says he uses multiple the trainer times. Road yeah. plans. So Chad, good job.
How many classes, yeah.
Yeah, he says he just gives his users the trainer road plans too. Yeah. I mean, the coach is much more than a plan. There's
way
like
more
all
than
this,
that.
Yeah. Oh, he coaches, but
it's like 10% the plans and 90% everything sure. else.
Yeah.
But
the fact
it's
our plans.
Yeah, it's cool. Chad's smiling right now.
as Chad should be smiling.
Yeah.
I want to talk about one thing that you just said, the prioritization side of things. So you mentioned that Friday was the easier workout, and if you had to skip a workout in every week, that would be the one. So when you're training with a little kid and, you know, you have a child and you have, I assume, a pretty demanding job too, you have all these different demands. How is that common for you to cut the week or cut that workout out of your week?
Yeah, I think so. The Friday workout, it probably was in the last, you know, and it's more about actually my being fair on my wife, I think, because I don't really only train when my child was sleeping. So it was actually more I want to spend time with my wife a bit. So so particularly Friday nights, that's not a good one to say I'm going to jump on the turbo now at 8 p.m. So
yeah.
I mean, that would typically be the reason for that, actually. Yeah, so, but in terms of prioritization, I mean, it's very clear what are the really key workouts you have to hit in any week. And in my head, I always had that hierarchy, and you just sort of get cross things off as you do them, and then you just go down the list, basically.
David, before you qualified, what would be like what could you hold 10 100s on, 100 meters in the pool?
Well, I mean, before I qualify, that's it's difficult to say, really. I guess so. In Ironman Nice, when I 9 years ago, I swam 105, mm-hmm. And that's not on that much training, really. I guess, and so maybe. Or do you mean actually literally just before I qualified?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. So I was around 125.
125.
Yeah.
Cool. 457. And then what would be like leading up before the race, before you would qualify or this race, what would be some key run sessions and pace that you would?
Yeah, okay. So for, it's been a bit different for this time, South Africa. And this time, I think for South Africa, I was just very, very scared about injury, actually. So I think I probably was a bit overly cautious. But what I liked to do was the long run and negative splitting everything. So I do say a 2.5 hour run with an hour at sort of 5 minute pace, which is my sort of goal day pace, I guess you'd call it. And then an hour at race pace, which is 4:30, 4:45. And then half an hour at a half Ironman pace, which is around 4 minute kilometers, and doing something like that, feeling relatively fresh at the end after a hard bike the day before, was sort of something that I knew I was basically in the zone already.
And that's minutes per kilometer.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Sorry.
You just lose some people.
They're like, whoa.
4 minute miles.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty impressive. So roughly you're looking somewhere around like we're talking like 8 minute pace, somewhere around there. Yeah.
Possibly,
for
yeah.
miles. Somewhere around
yeah,
there.
I'm not pretty good at miles.
Roughly. So somebody's just losing their mind right now because I missed the exact amount.
I'm getting the calculator out.
5 is 8.
While you do that, one thing that I think, so you're coming into this green as far as Kona goes, but you've been doing triathlon for some time now. Mm-hmm. You mentioned injury coming into this. Like you said that you were very afraid of that. Have you had injuries that you've had to work through before? Like chronic overuse?
Well, first off, what's your background? I mean, do you come from a running background, swimming, cycling?
No, so from, I've done sport all my life. I think from 15 to 20, I did rowing at school, university, school in terms of English school and then university, not particularly successfully. But then after that, I guess I split my time pretty evenly between just random running events, random cycling events, and then more recently triathlon. So a sort of mix of everything, but I've never been especially good at one sport, I guess.
Mm. And on the
on
the injury front, have you had them before?
The only time I've been really injured is where I've had quite a long break and then just try to go into it and just destroy myself. And then I've had two stress fractures in my feet.
Ooh.
But it wasn't related to serious training. Like, but like I spent 3 months in Moscow on a secondment and didn't do any exercise, and then came back and tried to run 20K or something, and just then was in a cast for 2 months or something.
Cause just trying to make up for lost time.
Just trying to make up for lost time. Yeah. Well, just I enjoy running. I mean, yeah. it wasn't that I was worried about being fit. I just
didn't have durability for those long runs, but you like the long runs. So exactly. That's what you did.
Yeah, exactly. And, but throughout the last year of building, I've been pretty lucky actually. I've had a tiny bit of ITB issues in my leg, but I've worked those out pretty well and done and just enormous amount of stability work, mobility work, and rolling and stuff.
The best way to prevent injury is to never run.
Yeah, that is definitely true. Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's kind of how it goes. Nate.
I'd like to know, how do you eat, and then how do you eat like night before, morning, and during the race?
Yeah, so I think in terms of everyday nutrition, that was probably the biggest thing I changed actually in terms of my build for South Africa. And I think probably the biggest impact I had, I couldn't believe how much I could train and how much training stress I could take. And I really think nutrition was the biggest thing. And in terms of what it was just a sort of standard, like clean diet, right? I mean, I think you've been talking about it a bit recently, just an enormous amount of fruit and veg, and particularly enormous amount of vegetables. So the main, apart from maybe breakfast, the main part of any meal is just a huge pile of veg, basically.
Lots of
plants, exactly. Yeah. And then second to that is really trying to fuel absolutely every workout well, because you guys talk about, you know, you don't need to fuel under an hour and a half, but actually if you're doing Ironman, you know, you're training so much that you're not just fueling for that one workout. You're fueling for the next morning's workout or that evening's workout and stuff. So I found that by sort of playing around and stuff, the only solution was just to eat really well during every workout.
I've also found that in my big increase was fueling every single one, because I was a little worried about weight, right? You get so concerned about weight and you're like, oh, it's an hour, I don't need this. But it just helps with recovery.
Yeah.
And then the next workout is stronger and your legs feel better. I think you can look back at podcasts where I'd always complain about tired legs.
Yeah.
I like barely ever have tired legs anymore, which is amazing.
It makes a huge difference. At what time do you train usually, and how do you time your meals with that, like with the job and everything else?
Yeah, so typically, I guess during South Africa, I train in the morning and in the evening, right? So before I'd either run or swim in the morning, and before that, I'd have a banana or energy bar or something. And then as soon as I finish, protein shake, get to work, have an enormous bowl of porridge. And then, eat very well during the day. And then just, I guess, around half an hour before my evening workout, I'd have like some toast and jam or something like that. And then throughout the bike, I'd always have sports drink and maybe a gel if it's more than an hour.
So what about race? Well, what are you going to do, eat like the day and night before the race here?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So, I see it as kind of a 2-day process actually. Like, so from today, I'll cut out all, up to this evening when we have 2 days to go, basically I'll eat very healthily still, basically only fruit and veg, a bit of protein and carbs. But then from tomorrow, I'll switch to just carbs basically. And the day before, I'll have a really enormous breakfast, eat pretzels and isotonic drink throughout the day, and then actually not have an enormous evening meal. I think that's typically what you see recommended. So now I'll eat around 6:30, a bowl up with pasta with a bit of chicken, but not huge, because you should have done most of your eating by 12, so it's all really digested and you're not making any last minute trips to the porta potty and stuff in the morning. And that also helped. That's what I did in South Africa, and it worked well.
What are you going to do race morning?
Race morning is porridge and a bagel, as it always is and always has been. So
when you say porridge, does that mean oatmeal or like real rice porridge?
Oatmeal, sorry. Yeah.
It's okay.
How far prior to the event?
3.5 hours. Yeah.
Okay.
How much oatmeal?
So you're gonna be up early.
I'm gonna be up early. Yeah, but luckily I'm still going to bed at 8 and waking up at 4. Oh, okay. So, or half 4. So that shouldn't be too much problem for me. Yeah. How much oatmeal? An average size bowl. Not anything disgusting.
Not crazy.
No.
Neat size.
You guys both looked at me.
I think all three of us did. David did too.
Yeah.
you have an amazing ability to eat an amazing amount of food.
Thank you guys.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Glad you noticed. Okay. So let's talk about swim. Obviously you can't eat. Mm-hmm. What do you do? How are you going to fuel on the bike?
Yeah. So for the bike, it's, I basically do exactly what I did in South Africa, and that worked very, very well. So I'm not gonna reinvent the wheel. And what that is, it's,
sorry to interrupt you. Was South Africa warmer, cooler?
Yeah, it was. Well, it was warmer. It got up to about 20, 27, 28, but that was really at the peak. So I guess it's slightly cooler. But and actually the big thing is it's different on course nutrition drinks. So that actually changes slightly just the volume. But what the goal was on the bike was 100 grams of carbs an hour, which sounds quite high actually.
It does not sound high. That's what I advocate.
Yeah, although it is higher than many people. The majority of people don't eat
that
much.
If you look at the standard guidelines, I'd say it's high. And a part of that, is obviously, I've trained it every single workout. I make sure I can take in that amount. And actually, I did, for South Africa, I did quite a lot of like overeating, where I tried to have 120 grams, 130 grams of carbs, just to see how it felt.
How did it feel?
Not so good on the run, actually. Because I did brick work. I always did a sort of half an hour run off the bike, just to see how the stomach felt. And not so good. But I think good training for the stomach, right? And I really think the stomach needs to be trained as much. So 100 grams of carbs, and it was around 800 milligrams of sodium. I think sodium's actually, or salt, sorry. And I think
it's, how frequently with the sodium?
It's all together, right? So most of that came through the on-course drink which they had. But then also had a sort of aero flask full of gels and with a few more salt pills in, sort of mixed up to make sure I got the exactly right amount of salt, basically. Okay.
What kind of gels?
So it's the ones you like, the SS isotonic, cool. I think.
Science and sport ones?
Science and sport, exactly.
Yeah, same with your hydration fluid?
The hydration fluid I use what's on the course. So it was High Five in South Africa, and here I use Gatorade.
Have you been using Gatorade in your training at all to try to?
Yeah, exactly. All I've drunk for the last 3.5 months. Yeah.
Did you notice?
I just picture like no water, no coffee. Here's some Gatorade.
Have you noticed?
Just oatmeal, just pour some Gatorade in there.
Was there like an adoption period? Was it hard at first? Did your body reject it or no?
No, I don't think they're that different really, the makeup, to be honest. In fact, I if anything, Gatorade's a bit better than the High Five we had before because it's slightly more dilute, so I can drink a liter an hour, and that's actually gives my nutrition needs perfectly. Whereas the other one was 750 milliliters, and that was enough carbs basically. So
pretty much mostly liquid, and then some gels, and then salt tablets mixed in the gels. Yep. And that's pretty interesting because some people. So there's a couple products. I'm guessing, are you breaking open capsules?
Yeah, exactly, for the bike. Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's also I think Hammer makes it, and some other people where it's actually like a powder, and you could scoop it in there. Mm-hmm. Both are. It's kind of cool, and some people don't know about that.
It's smart. Yeah. It's smart to take it in like that. It just makes it a little bit easier, less fuss or hassle.
Yeah, I mean, trying to fit it with salt pills on the bike would be...
What happens is they get wet, and then they melt.
Well, that as well, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so yeah. Especially here, like we did a ride today, every part of me was wet.
Yeah.
Like after I was shivering at coffee afterward just because you get so wet in the evaporative cooling when you stop.
Yeah. You just actually recently I can't remember what race it was, but you had caffeine pills. You were fiddling with the caffeine pills mid-ride and you dropped them. So
caffeine pills come in foil packs, and that's if I was to make salt pills, I would put them in little foil packs, and that was just mountain biking and I was just derping.
It's tricky. Yeah.
No, it's not tricky. I was just derping. Like it's really easy to get your mouth.
What do you mean by derping? Yeah, we should probably explain that. It's probably like a...
I don't know if that's a bad word to say. Like derp, derp, derp. Like,
gotcha, yeah,
just
yeah.
Not...
Like making, like, not focusing.
Yeah. If it's derogatory in some way, I'm sorry. I don't think it is. But it's just me being, like, not thinking. Like, yeah, just, hey, look at all those clouds. I'm going to eat some stuff.
Let's talk about caffeine.
Being complacent.
Caffeine.
Because you mentioned, we offered you a coffee when you showed up, and you mentioned that even though you wanted one, you will not have one because you've been phasing yourself off of it. Why do that?
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, basically, the idea is that your body reacts better to it on the day if you sort of deprive yourself of caffeine for the 2 weeks into the race. Like, I don't know if that's the case or not, but it seems to work for me. And I really feel like, so I have a caffeine gel just before the swim, and I don't know if it's psychological, but you really feel that sort of...
Yeah, if you're a habitual caffeine user, mm-hmm. you desensitize yourself to it by removing it from your diet for, you know, it literally takes weeks, depending on your intake. You know, if you're... Like Nate and I,
years for me,
quite a lot of coffee. Well, seriously, I've tried to go off it, and the headaches were so bad, I gave up quickly. But the fact is, you'll get more of a response to it than either of us would.
Yeah.
Mark Allen made that kind of famous, I think, in the triathlon world by he would not have any caffeine till race day, and people were like, "Whoa, that's crazy!" But it does make sense.
Mm-hmm. How are you planning to utilize caffeine on race day, other than the pre-swim gel?
Yeah, so I have it's basically keep it steady over the whole course. So in the gel flask, I'll have two gels with caffeine in, and then
how much caffeine?
Yeah,
so 75
milligrams. 75 milligrams per gel.
Yeah, I think that's correct. Yeah. So, because the total is around 300, actually. I think I did the math. It's the maximum you should have in at any one time for my body weight. So, and then on the run, I'll have two gels. I always use the SS gels on the run, and I'll have two caffeine gels then.
So you'll have like a race belt?
Yeah, I have a race belt. It'll have four gels and the salt stick. What's it called? Thing that dispenses.
Yeah, it's like a skinny stick. Looks like a little rod.
Yeah,
and you can then dispense.
Yeah.
Salt sticks. So like we talked about, they don't get. They don't dissolve.
Yeah, it's salt tablets. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, salt tablets. Yeah,
very, very convenient. Yeah.
And then what about a special needs bag? That turnaround.
Special needs. So actually, I didn't have for South Africa, but I think this time I will. I'll have a frozen bottle of very, very high concentrate salt isotonic drink.
Okay.
Sort of 1500 milligram.
Okay. Huh. So is that, and that's something that you're mixing yourself to be stronger, I assume?
No, it's precision hydration. Yeah.
I use that today.
They know what
1500.
And Chad, you did not have sweat stains all over you. You look fantastic.
Yeah.
You sprinted away from us after we stopped at the coffee shop.
Yeah, I might be figuring some things out. We'll see.
That's awesome. Chad's got a little smile, devious smile on his face.
Yeah. Okay. Looking at your goals for this race.
Wait.
Oh yeah, you got.
What do you eat on the run?
Oh yeah, that's
it. How do you do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, it just these the four gels that I'll have. That will be the main source, and then I'll take. They have actually aid stations every mile here, so I'll just drink the Gatorades on course, and then switch to Coke maybe for the last 10K.
So four gels and then Gatorade to Coke, depending on how you feel, or do you have like a certain target?
No, it's depending on how I feel. It will probably work out to around 60 grams, 50, 60 grams, and that worked exactly for me for South Africa. So basically, I don't want to change anything that I did in South Africa because it worked. So
50 to 60 grams per hour.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, cool. So it's two like 100 grams per hour on the bike, but then on the run you're doing about half as much, or because it is it's hard to ingest 100 grams while you're running.
Exactly that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly that. You're especially around. When it's this hot. I mean,
when it's hot, it's way harder to digest. Yeah. This is a hard race. Good luck, David.
That's what they say. Yeah, that's what they say. Yeah, we'll see.
We're gonna drink smoothies. We've planned it out. We're gonna have like three different smoothies.
We're gonna be there at the race start. And we're going to do the very hard task of climbing back up to the house from down at the race start. And then
while you're on the bike, we'll be on that couch right there drinking smoothies. Yep.
It's a tough life. Yeah. But then we'll be at the finish again later on. So you'll probably beat us to the finish though. You're fast. So one thing that I'd like to cover is coming from Moscow, like, a cold environment. And even though you train inside on the bike, I'm sure that you're just not used to this sort of heat and humidity. Have you noticed, you came over Friday, so you came over 7 days ahead of time, I guess 8 days, technically. Has there been an adoption curve? Have you already noticed a difference? Because a lot of people kind of ask, how long should I come down before?
Yeah, so I mean, I think before that, heat acclimatization has been an enormous part of my build for this time. I've done a lot of, to go into it. So I've done basically two to three sauna sessions a week where I do a workout, typically a run, and then I'll go to the sauna. First time it's 2 times 7 minutes, and then building up to 2 times 10, 15 minutes.
At what temperature?
I don't actually know, to be honest. I'm not sure.
Uncomfortably
hot. Yeah. I mean, the first time you're sitting in, it's so miserable.
Okay. Yeah.
But I noticed an enormous, even in that, I've been doing it for say a month, just over a month. And even in those few weeks, the time I could spend in there was just enormously increased. So it clearly worked. Yeah. But then also for the rides, I've been doing a lot of, a few rides. So the Friday ride I was doing with extra clothes on and with no fan and the windows closed. Mm. And then the Saturday ride, I typically do the last hour at race pace with no fan and
How does that feel?
Awful, I bet.
The first time I did it, it was absolutely disgusting. But the last time I did it, it felt really good. And I took a lot of confidence from that.
That's
awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You mentioned you were using the sauna. You're running and then you're sitting in the sauna, right? You're not combining the two with the treadmill and the sauna.
No, not at all.
Because that's a question that people ask a lot is like, do I need to actually train in the heat to get the advantage?
So, no. I mean, and just running in the gym is already pretty hot, right? So the idea is you elevate your core temperature enough and then you get in the sauna
Well, Nate and I tried that. We put a trainer into the shower, and it was very uncomfortable. So
a ride where my heartbeat would normally be like 120, it was like 170.
It was crazy.
Yeah. I did Baxter. It was horrible.
Yeah, pretty rough. Yeah.
Horrible.
Are we ready to talk about goals?
Eating demand for your blood
and anticipation.
I didn't answer your question about how it feels getting here.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
So it hasn't felt that bad, to be honest. I think the first run I did, I felt maybe slightly off, a slightly higher heart rate, but really I got into it quite well. But I think that's partly genetics and the fact that I've always been quite good at the heat, and I'm incredible for my height. I'm very skinny. So I think that definitely
You're very lean.
Lean. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I would just hope because I think we're, are we gonna have a picture up of him?
Yeah.
Later, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So take
yeah.
your shirt off. We'll get us. Do you have any idea what your body fat is?
No, but I think it's pretty low. I mean, yes, as I said, 182 and under 66 kilograms is very, very light.
Yeah, like, I'd put you 5% with fat calibers, maybe somewhere around there. It's pretty lean.
Low. It's low. Yeah,
there's no excess there.
Yeah.
We've been checking you out this whole podcast. It's Chad and I.
You also mentioned that you've been depriving yourself of AC while you're here, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So you got into this house and we're just screwing up your training because we have this thing pegged. It's just full the whole time.
Yeah, no problem sleeping at night.
Yeah, yeah.
No problem with sleeping at night. No, absolutely not. I have a fan in my room, obviously, and I showered before bed just to cool myself down. But it's been fine. Yeah.
That's actually probably a smart approach if you're racing. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, you don't want to get into
as
a spot.
As long as it doesn't interfere with your sleep, I wouldn't change it.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's a smart approach. So no AC in the car either?
You're just windows open.
Windows open, let it roll. Yeah.
Getting used to it. While you're here for this week, are you doing anything special with hydration, like being in a hot environment the whole time?
Yeah, I mean, constantly drinking isotonic. So I have tablets that I put into my water almost every single drink. So,
what
yeah.
tablets?
Precision hydration, yeah. But I also have some power. It doesn't really matter, right, I think. But yeah, precision hydration mostly.
Cool. Got it. Yeah,
are those so those just like salt tablets pretty much, like noon or something?
It's just like noon. It's the same thing. Yeah.
And it's no calories?
No calories. Well, it's a tiny bit of sugar, but that helps absorption. But they have different strengths. So I have the 1,000 milligram one, which is, cool. Seems to be good.
Do you have some of those too, Chad, here?
1,000 and 1,500, yeah.
Ooh, can I borrow some? Or not borrow. I want to have it. I'm not giving it back.
Someone's taking them other than me because they're dwindling.
I haven't taken any.
Not me?
You didn't take any?
No. Maybe Tony stole some yesterday.
No, I must have
just worn that. Just kidding, Tony.
Yeah, no. I've been sticking to the scratch stuff. Okay, so now let's talk about... So you haven't done this race before. Oftentimes, perhaps the stereotypical Kona fool that comes in, you know, doesn't know anything about the race. They assume that I'll be close to, you know, a normal PR that I would have on a typical Ironman. But in this case, it's usually much more common to see a slightly slower, but it really depends on course conditions. Have you come into this setting like, I want this time finish? Or what's your aspiration?
Yeah, so that's a massive pitfall, basically, of everyone that comes to Kona for the first time. You know, I obsessively read race reports and stuff, and and every single race report have gone wrong. It's exactly that, right? It's someone that says, oh, I was riding and my watch went exactly where I wanted to be, so I stepped on the watch a bit, and then I was running and I ran exactly the pace that I thought I could just about hold, and then I blew up and stuff. So it's the goal is to not have any of those sort of outcome-based targets, right? And focus on the process. And as a result, the idea is the result should be as good as possible. Having said that, I went 9:26 on a relatively slow course. So under 10, I think, would be a good result for me and something that I could be happy with and then sort of rest easily. But yeah, it's a bit of a lottery out there, even if you're super prepared and don't do anything stupid, you know, so...
So I guess what is your goal then? Is it just to be here, race, do like a great race? Because you mentioned that you might be a one and done Kona person.
Yeah, everyone says that, so that doesn't necessarily mean that's the case. But yeah, no, that's it. So I mean, yeah, you hear all these pros saying the same in the interviews, right? The goal is to really have a race that I feel like I've got the most out of myself. And actually, South Africa, that my qualifying race was the first race where I really feel like that's been the case. You know, I haven't had any nutrition problems or any pacing problems or anything. Yeah. And so if I could have a race like that where I'm running down the last sort of 5K feeling like I'm on the edge, but feeling still relatively strong, that would be an amazing result, right?
That's the best feeling. And two, that's kind of it's a great goal just to be like, all I want to do is execute so that I get the most out of me.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you do that, because if you don't do it too, you can improve it, but you can never really control who else is going to be racing, right?
Exactly,
so getting first place, it's a hard goal to have a first place, but get the most out of you. That's
pretty tough at world champs too.
Slightly.
Yeah.
Especially, yeah. I mean, with if the conditions switch, and oftentimes they do for age groupers too, like the pros end up a lot of the time, the fast riders in the pro field, they come in before a famous wind switch that happens.
Well, they turn around before the wind.
And then, what ends up happening is that you have favorable conditions if you're extremely fast and you're a pro. But, you know, if you're not one of the extremely fast few, then you end up suffering the consequences of that shift in the wind that ends up slowing down your time. So many things could change. And it's been raining here, a little bit more humid than previous years. So that could change things too. Do you have any, like, does rain affect your I guess the possibility of rain, does that affect your race plan in any way?
I mean, it'd be fantastic if it was to happen. Yeah, no, I don't think it would change anything, to be honest. No.
Yeah, I mean, with the Evade, you don't have a shield on there, so you probably don't have to worry about things fogging up or anything else.
Do you
like
run
that.
Sockless also?
No, I wear socks for the run, definitely, yeah.
Got it, huh.
Let's see, I think the Vaporflies don't hold water, too. I want to say.
They felt, I mean, in South Africa, you're obviously pouring water yourself every time, and it didn't feel like they were sort of bunging up too much, so they felt okay, yeah.
That's the only thing, I've done a marathon in, like, just total downpour, your feet can get super heavy, and then you get the swamp foot, which is not good. So that would be the only thing, but we rode the other day when it kind of sprinkling would be amazing, right? Like cold, it's cooler than the air temperature, makes evaporative cooling. Yeah. If that happens, you're in for a treat. Well, I think, not a treat, I guess. It's never a treat.
No,
yeah.
But no sun would be amazing. I mean,
no sun is just pretty much it.
Brutal, yeah. Like, yeah.
You guys should see Chad. I've never heard someone talk about the heat as much as Chad here. And but it's true. The difference between clouded and sunny in Hawaii is like, it feels like 20 degrees.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. Instantly.
Yeah, the perception, just as soon as the clouds roll over the sun, everything changes. I feel so much better about life in general. And I feel like, I'm good for another couple hours.
Yeah,
and then it pops back on, I'm good for another 5 minutes.
yeah, it really does change it. Do you have any idea of what pace you assume to be swimming at to start the day?
So I did the practice swim on Saturday, and I swam 58 minutes. So I mean, probably a bit slower than that in the race. It'll be a bit more of a bit more paced and just a bit more of a
dodging people,
dodgy, and I'll get hit probably and need to adjust my goggles and stuff like that. But around the hour mark, I reckon. Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
That's good too. And for people who aren't triathletes, it's very not smart to try to go super hard on the swim.
Yeah.
It's usually how it works out is maybe a little hard at first to get in a good pack, settle in the pack. Mm-hmm. And then if it's pushing you too much, you drop out of that pack and kind of go by yourself because you have a really, really long day ahead of you.
Absolutely.
And you know, no one's ever won it on the swim. Ever.
Yeah.
But the quote is they lose it. I'm sure you've all heard that
before. Do you do anything special to expedite transition times? Like, do you have anything set up in a specific way, or have you learned throughout the process of qualifying to do something slightly different?
No, I mean, tonight I'll run through my transitions a couple of times, perhaps getting on the bike and stuff, but I don't think anything particularly unique, you know.
You'll actually do the whole transition? Will you put a wetsuit on? Or not a wetsuit, do you do a skin
suit? I'll do a skin suit, yeah.
Yeah.
I will actually, yeah, because I haven't ever raced with that. I used it for the first time on Saturday, and it felt fine, but I'll just practice it once, yeah.
Cool. Got it.
Is that something you wear the entire event?
No, it's just for the swim. You put it over your tri-suit, and it's just slightly...
Oh, okay.
It's the Hydro.
1 to 3 seconds per 100 meters faster, apparently, so I don't know if it makes any difference. Yeah, but you feel like you're the part, so...
Hey, anything that helps, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. How about on the bike? Do you have, like, a wattage, and are you going for, like, a typical average or normalized power, or have you set, like, in the flats, I want to be here, on the climbs, I don't want to go over this, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so again, the focus is much more the process, right? In South Africa, I did the same sort of approach. So I more had sort of ceilings that I didn't want to exceed for all the climbs. Uh-huh. And I looked at best bike split before. So I have a sort of feeling of what I should be doing on each of the climbs. And I really don't want to be exceeding those. In South Africa, I was on track for around 210 watts, which would have been just below 70% of FTP, which would be right around where I thought I would have wanted to be. You hear people talking about 75%, but I think that's pretty aggressive.
That's lofty.
It's pretty hard.
You've really got
to
be...
That's hard for me. I don't have to run after that, and I haven't done the swim.
It's doable, but then you have to run a marathon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I could hold 75% without the marathon. But it said yes, and that's just what it turns out. That's what it turned out to be by feel. Like, so when I was riding in South Africa, I wasn't saying, oh, what's now, right? It's more than, yeah, whenever you're on the climbs, you're just glancing, okay, that's fine. I'm not going too mad. And it'll be the same for this one, yeah.
Got it. So, I mean, you're roughly, so you said 66 kilograms, and then if that's 145 pounds for us that use the Imperial system, but what are those ceilings that you plan to not break on this course?
Sure. So it depends on the grade, right? So there's some really steep climbs.
They really are. Like, people don't realize that. Like, going out to Javi, those rollers are actually darn, like, they're severe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But as a rule, I really don't want to exceed the 270 mark. And generally, that would be the absolute upper limit. I think for most of the sort of rollers on Javi, around 240, 250 will be... to be where I'm looking for to.
And still a 210 normalized?
Still a 210 normalized, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Because, I'll take it much easier on the way down. And in fact, actually, maybe a tiny bit lower than that, really. Yeah, that's as I said, it's more that I see it as the upper limit that I don't want to be exceeding. Yeah. It's not that I'm thinking, I've got to be at 240 now. I've got to be. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and not at all. It's like, if it's super steep, if it hits 270, right, let's take it down a bit. It's more that way of thinking.
And also in the last three quarters, I'm guessing if you're not seeing around 210, you're not trying to pick it up to raise it.
100% not, no.
Yeah.
Not in any way, yeah.
Because you have a marathon.
Yeah, exactly.
You're in the heat.
Yeah.
Actually, that'd be like a good sign, right? Like if you came in not too far down, but just enough that you've still kept the speed up.
It was feeling good.
If you kept the speed up, but then had that, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, that would be great, but let's see.
What about the pace on the run?
So
same thing with like ceilings?
It's not quite as steep, apart from the Palani, which I'll definitely walk, which is a very, very steep climb. And there's no doubt that I'm walking that to keep the heart rate low. It's much more the what I don't want to see going over. So I went for, I think my average pace was 4:50 around just below 4:50 in South Africa. And here I reckon I'll be around 5:10. I think that's the plan.
So just over 8 minutes. So,
right around eight.
Yeah. So I really, really don't want to see under 5 at any point. Unless I'm running a really steep downhill, and that will be again.
Or it's the last mile.
Unless it's the last mile, and in that case, yeah, anything's good. But it's mostly limiting.
I'm excited for you.
Yeah. I'm excited too. It should be fun, right? It's an amazing difference.
What do they call it? Type 2 fun?
Type 2.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Type 2 fun. Yeah. 100%.
What, any special plans for the Energy Lab or anything else like that? Are you, like you mentioned that you're going to walk Palani. Are you going to be walking the aid stations? And then also, what about the Energy Lab?
No. I, again, based on my South Africa experience, I could do a pretty good job running through the aid stations, maybe slow down a bit, making sure I'm getting everything I need, but no. And the Energy Lab, I ran it yesterday and it actually didn't feel so bad. I mean, that touch wood, maybe it wasn't so hot, but no special plans. Just, keep it relaxed. Ooh, and steady.
I have a question. Yep. So you did 100% indoors. Did you do like 5 hour indoor sessions?
Yeah, so for South Africa, I did three 5 hour sessions. Which is,
how'd that feel?
I mean, once you've done that, anything's easy, right? And I'm easy. Yeah,
We're an indoor, well, not indoor company, but we have one of our products is indoors because we have new products. Calendar just launched. Performance analytics out there too.
Yes.
But 5 hours indoors is. Did you do it in the air position?
Yeah.
That's hard mentally.
If you can do that, that's like impressive. You said,
three times.
Like psychologically, perhaps more than anything, it's not about like even like physiologically like doing.
I think
it
there
the
is
body.
A. How is the training benefit on that? Like not stopping spinning for 5 hours.
Oh yeah,
I think phenomenal. But I think the two most important things were probably the psychological and also nutrition. I think because nutrition is the most important thing for Ironman, and that's actually why I wanted to do it because I did one Ironman a few years ago and I just had a nightmare with nutrition basically. So. Yeah, that was actually the main motivation, I think. If I'd been more confident about that, I probably wouldn't have done so many because it's just absolutely disgusting.
Did you stay on it the whole time for 5 hours? And backpedaling, getting out of the saddle, I imagine?
I probably popped to the toilet once or twice, but apart from that, yeah. Oh,
that's impressive. In arrow.
It's impressive. Yeah. Usually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're much better than us. That's all. Yeah.
Like everyone here is.
I know, right? That's what happens. That's you come to here. Kona, and if you're a confident person elsewhere, you go, wow. Yeah. I'm not that fast.
It's true.
Well, this is awesome. Thank you, David. I feel like we got a lot of actionable insights. It's cool to see somebody going into this the first time with so much, I guess, confidence and optimism, but not to the point of,
I would say enthusiasm.
But that's, yeah, so like, hear me out. Pause me here. So the fact is there are plenty of people that show up to this race and they have a lot of apprehension and it bleeds over into breeding pessimism or negativity perhaps. And it just because it's such a huge thing to take on.
You can see it on their faces. I mean, as we ride up and down Ali'i, you just see so many people with very serious expressions on their faces. They all look terrified.
Yeah, so it's really refreshing to see a person feel like, hey, I've worked these things out. And this is my plan. My plan is to stick to this, not something unrealistic or something that's so, so stiff, that goal that I can't, be flexible with it based on circumstances. It's just refreshing to see somebody have such an honest look at it and still at the same time maintain optimism. So I think that's so much. There have been races that I've had where, physically, I'm not fit or I don't have one component that's absolutely needed in one respect or another. But if you have that mindset and you're in a good space mentally, it can really help out. So you're a good example of that. It's going to be great. Yeah. Thanks for joining us. If anybody's listening to this podcast, you should head over to forum.trainerroad.com because there will be a forum post in here. Have you been in the forum yet?
No, I haven't. No. Oh, quite busy in the last few months. So,
I assume so. Well, you should check it out if you have time. It'd be awesome. I'm sure that people will be jumping in there.
Ask you questions.
They might have questions about how you've specifically prepared. Certainly no obligation, but it'd be cool to have you in there. We'll have a post in there that will be specifically all about David's race. So you can see that. We'll update on that as well with your bike splits and your times and like what you did. So then people
no
can
pressure.
See that.
No pressure there, yeah.
Literally millions and millions. Just kidding.
Yeah. But it'll be cool. They give people kind of like a whole roundabout experience on the whole thing. So thanks for joining us. We'll get some pictures. I'd love to somehow meet up with you in town so we can get pictures of your bike too. That would be really cool to do. So then we can get that going. But yeah, thanks for joining us, man. And good luck. It's going to be fun to cheer you on.
Go have a good day.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, David.